Life is something that we all desperately want, isn't it? Every part of our day is just filled with trying to thrive, trying to overcome challenges, pushing towards life. It's interesting to look at the different types of movies that we watch and how life is the theme of so many of them. You watch adventure shows or a show like Everest, where a character says, "When I'm down in the city, it's just like there's this dark cloud over me and just this depression hanging onto me. But when I get up into the mountains, the cloud lifts and I'm free, and there I truly experience life." And so many of the shows say that sort of thing, where they're wanting life, they're seeking after life and life to the fullest. It's not just adventure shows, but aren't romance shows the same sort of thing? Where they'll meet somebody and they'll be like, "Ah, you complete me." And when they learn to love each other, they have the acceptance and the approval that brings out the best of them so that they thrive, so that they do the best, and they live life to the fullest. Even zombie shows are that way too, right? Run away from the zombies, like escape at all costs and hang on to your life, and they're fighting for their lives. We all desperately want life. That's what we're seeking after. That's what we desire. And that's why insurance companies do so well. They tell us anything that goes wrong, don't worry, we'll cover it. You've got nothing to worry about. Hey, even if you die, everything will be okay for those around you. There'll be money available. And so they sell us, they're selling us, everything is going to be okay. We want life. We get inspired by life. We get inspired when we see others living life. And that's where Jesus, he proves to be an amazing and wonderful example. Let's look at Romans 6, verse 8. In Romans 6 is all about Jesus and being connected to him through baptism and through life. And in Romans 6, 8, it says, "Now if we died with Christ, we believe that we will also live with him." Now if we died with Christ, we believe that we will also live with him. Jesus is the one who truly lived. And this verse here is telling us that he has life and that we can have life through him. Since Jesus rose from the dead, life only comes through Jesus. And let's look at the life of Jesus, because didn't he live totally unencumbered by anything? Jesus, he didn't have a fear of people. He wasn't a people pleaser. And so he could truly thrive. He could truly live. He could spend time in the high-class society, enjoying their banquets and having the seat of honor and everyone saying he's wonderful. And it didn't go to his head in such a way that the next moment you see him holding the children. You see him spending time with the marginalized people of society. And so many times people are dragged down by peer pressure and the social pressures. But Jesus, he truly lived. And he could live and thrive amongst a variety of people. Because Jesus, he wasn't bound by anything. In fact, Jesus wasn't even bound by physical limitations. He could walk on water. He could say to the wind and the waves, "Shh," and they'd listen to him. Jesus truly lived. And Jesus' teachings, it was all about life. It was all about hope. It was about joy and contentment. And he just thrived in that. Now, of course, we know, we celebrated and we remembered on Good Friday that Jesus' life was cut short. It was premature. He was killed, and he was killed unjustly. But we can even look at his life and we can say, "No, I'm content with how he lived because he stayed true to himself right to the end." He lived very well, and we can say, although his life was cut short, he truly lived. But that isn't the end of his life, was it? Because we read that 3 days later, early in the morning, people, they go to his tomb and they see the stone is rolled away. They look and he's not there. The angels appear and they say, "Why are you looking for the living amongst the dead?" He's alive, just as he told you. Jesus rose from the dead. And although Jesus lived a full and abundant life as he was living, and then he died, the death couldn't hold him. Death couldn't keep him down. Jesus conquered the grave. He rose from the dead. And think of what that means for life for him then. If he truly lived even before he was crucified, now that he has risen from the dead, he truly has life, limitless potential for life. In fact, Jesus is life. So we desperately want life, and we look to Jesus and we see that he is the one who who truly lived. He wasn't hindered by anything. He lived a true and a complete life, and he conquered the grave. And now we see that life is found for us as we're connected to Jesus. And there was a verse in Romans 6, verse 8, that word with shows up there twice. If we die with Christ, we believe we will also live with him. And that with is a connection word. It's meaning there's this connection, there's this belonging, there's this togetherness. And it's saying that life is only found with Jesus. It's not like Jesus rose from the dead and he just kind of opened the way and anyone can just kind of wander through. It's like, no, it's with Jesus. It's as we're connected to him that the way is opened up. And we're invited in to participate in the death and the resurrection of Jesus as we're connected with Jesus. And that connection is so important. And we see that all throughout life, right? Just simple things. Like you go into Costco, you don't have a membership card. Are they going to let you in the door? No. But if you go in with someone with the card, they flash their card and you walk right in with them. And you walk around the Costco. I tell my daughter, oh, run ahead and pick up some things. She's like, well, I can't run ahead because they won't let me have samples unless I'm with you. I'm like, really? So she sticks by close to me. And when she's with me, then they're like, okay, she's with an adult. She can have the samples. And here it's saying life is found with Jesus. This connection with him, it only happens because we're connected to Jesus. Now the next verse in Romans 6 verse 9 explains a little bit about how that works. It says, for we know that since Christ was raised from the dead, he cannot die again. Death no longer has mastery over him. Death no longer has mastery over him. Think about that, right? Jesus is not mastered by death. The Bible describes that the reason that death is in this world is because of sin. Right at the beginning, God said, do not eat this fruit. The day you eat of it, you will surely die. The Bible tells us the wages of sin is death. Death is in the world because of sin. In fact, all of life is marked by death. Death has mastery over every aspect of life. And not just physical death when we take our last breath, but death is crunching in. Death is fighting against us, trying to master us in every element of life. You're trying to perfect your golf swing, and you're just about got it. You've been practicing, and then what do? Something to your shoulder, right? Then you got to go to physio. And it's like you're just about to perfect something, and your body breaks down, and something goes wrong. Because death is in this world, and it doesn't matter how hard we try, things are going wrong. Or you're getting really good at skiing, and you're ripping down the mountain, and then your knee goes. Death comes in and it grips us and it tries to control us. Not just in our physical bodies. You've got a great idea for a business. It's going to help lots of people. It's going to be a benefit. It's going to make a change in the world. But there's all this red tape and this politics and it's just hindering you. Kind of like when God told Adam the curse of sin is now you'll work in the fields and there'll be thorns and there'll be thistles. There'll be barriers in front of you no matter what you try and accomplish. There's just things in your way. There's thorns and thistles always hindering your productivity, and it's frustrating. Death has mastery over us. We try and cope. We try and do the best with this life that we have. We try and overcome obstacles. We try and overcome hurdles, and there's so many stories of victory, and yet all of these stories show that death has mastery over us. And it's not just the physical elements of death that's in this world, but doesn't sin also tug away at our own hearts to try and drag us down, to try and kill every good thing that's in our lives? How many of you started into a great marriage and you had so much hope and optimism that it was going to be so satisfying, and this is the life that you wanted to live, and then selfishness creeps in. And then pride creeps in, and things start to fall apart, and you start to wonder what's going wrong. How is this happening to me? And it's easy to point our finger and say, yeah, they had sin in them and they ruined the relationship. And yet, when we look at our own hearts, how much sin is in our own hearts? The greed, the selfishness, the pride that's there, that's destroying relationships, that's bringing things down. Death has mastery over us, and we try and overcome each of these obstacles. We try and fortify our lives against us, but death has mastery over us. In fact, Jesus described in John 8:34, he said, anyone who sins is a slave to sin. Over the last month, we've been looking at the book of Exodus. We've seen the people of Israel and how they were slaves in Egypt. And the thing about a slave is even if they want to do something else, their master has control and they say, no, this is what you're doing. And there might be parameters around that. There might be a certain amount of freedom in there, but the master is the ultimate word. And when Jesus says anyone who sins is a slave to sin, that's saying that sin rules our life, and then the wages of sin is death. Death has mastery over us. So in this verse, Romans 6:9, we read, "For we know that since Christ was raised from the dead, he cannot die again. Death no longer has mastery over him." What a contrast that is to our lives, right? Where we see all of life being dragged down and trying to overcome and trying to stand firm. And here's Jesus, he's risen above it. Death no longer has mastery over him. In fact, death no longer has mastery over Jesus, not because he just tried to overcome all the small obstacles along the way and fortify himself to stand firm. But sin said the wages of sin is death. The penalty for sin is death. And Jesus didn't just try and push sin away and avoid it. Rather, he says, I'm going to enter right in and pay that penalty. I will go to the cross. I will willingly give up my life and enter in and pay the penalty for sin. Not that Jesus did sin, but he says, I'll pay for the sin. In fact, that was the reason that he came to this world. That's the reason that Jesus came to exist on this world, is to die. On the cross, he could have called 10,000 angels to rescue him. He could have freed himself from the cross. He didn't have to be subject to people torturing him and abusing him and crucifying him. But Jesus says, I'll willingly go like a lamb to the slaughter, and I will pay the penalty of sin. I'll enter right in. I'll pay that penalty. And death had its last laugh, and it says, I have killed, I have defeated the Son of God. Death has happened to him. Except Jesus had mastery over him. It says, when Jesus was raised from the dead, he cannot die again. Therefore, death no longer has mastery over him. Jesus rose from the dead. Jesus conquered the grave. And death says, no, I will still get you down. You have to die. Jesus says, I've already died. I've already paid the penalty for that. I've risen to life. And because Jesus is alive, never to die again, we see that death can't touch him. We see that sin has no hold on him. We see that death no longer has mastery over Jesus. And one of my favorite things to do in the summertime is build sandcastles. Not like artistic sandcastles that look nice, more just big, huge mounds of sand. Because the tide's coming in, and I've got all my little barriers in place. I've got channels to flood the water away from my castle, and I want to see how long that castle can survive. And I love it. Normally I make my castle too far in, and the family says we have to go home before the tide even gets there. But when I do make it right, and the tide's coming in, the waves are washing against it, and the walls are standing firm, and I'm watching each little bit of sand as it's slowly getting eroded away, and it breaks through one barrier, and then there's this other barrier in place, and then there's the big castle. Bit by bit, the tide is coming, and it's washing away at my castle, and I want to see how long it can survive, right? And that's kind of what my life feels like, in that I just want to survive. I know sin and death, they're coming in and they're trying to have mastery over me and they're eroding me and they're wiping me out bit by bit. But Jesus, he didn't just say, I'm going to build a stronger castle so that it can last a little bit longer. He didn't say, well, fortify your life just a little bit more so you can hang on to one or two more waves. No, Jesus, he completely changed the tide. Right? He says, no, that death, it can't even touch you. He says, if you believe in me, you will never die. And we look around and we say, is that reality? And we look at the big picture and we say, yes, these physical bodies will die. And Jesus said, yeah, your physical bodies will die, but you will live forever. Who you are on the inside, who God has made for you, will live forever. That's the great hope that Jesus gives of death no longer having mastery. Sure, these physical bodies, they wear down and they get old. Get our creaks and our pains and we moan through it all. Yes, we will breathe our last breath, whether it's early in life or later on in life. But death, through Jesus, there's no mastery over death. Jesus has conquered the grave. Jesus has mastered death. And he doesn't say, I'll just fortify you so you can hang on stronger. He completely changes the tide and he says, death, eternal death, cannot touch you. You will live forever. But we remember in verse 6, verse 8 in Romans, it says, how does that come? It says, now we believe if we die with Christ, we will also live with Christ. It's the together with Jesus. And it's the together with Jesus that the next verse talks about us having a new master. In Romans 6:10, it says, the death he died to sin once for all. But the life he lives to God. Since Jesus rose from the dead, we have a new master. We are connected to Jesus. We're connected to Jesus through his death. And we're connected to Jesus through his resurrection. We come into life because of Jesus, because he mastered death. And it says we die to sin. We die with Christ. And that seems backwards math. We want to live. We want to avoid any of this dying business. We just want life. But the mathematics of the kingdom of God is backwards. It says if you want to have life, you have to give up your life. If you want to live forever, you must die with Christ. Dying with Christ means I'm setting aside all my own desires. I'm setting aside everything else I've relied on. I'm setting aside everything. And I'm dying to myself and the rule of my own life so that I can live with Christ. And so that he will be my new master. In fact, the tangible expression of how we believe this is through the Lord's Supper, through communion, which we'll celebrate in just a moment. Where Jesus, he takes the bread and he lifts it up and he says, this bread, it's my body. And it's broken for you. And he breaks the bread and he's showing his life will be taken from him. His body will be broken, and his body is broken. He says that he's dying to take away our sin, and so we are to die. We're to associate with Jesus in his death by setting aside our own lives, by setting aside our own rule in our own life, so that as we're connected with Christ in his death, we'll be raised with him in his resurrection, so that death will no longer have mastery over us. And imagine what that life looks like. Where we have this new master, where we're not ruled by death, but we're ruled by life, by the giver of life himself. Because so many times, we're hindered by our sin. We want security in life. We want everything to feel safe. We want everything to be okay, and that rules how we live. And often by fear, we're saying, I want to only do things that are safe and to prop myself up and make sure everything's okay. When we die to the fear, and we die to hanging on to our own security, and we raise together with Christ, and we have this new master, he provides something even better. He says, death won't have any mastery over you. You're all worried about being safe and secure, and you're so fearful of the worst case scenario. Jesus says, I'll take you and I'll hold you. Nothing can separate you from my love. In fact, you will live forever with me. He gives us a much better security. So much of our life we're hindered because we want the approval of people. We want people to accept us. And so in our selfishness, we're doing things to please them so that they can reciprocate it and tell us, you're okay, you're approved of. Jesus says, die to all of that. People can't give you worth and satisfaction when they pat you on the back and say you're approved of. Die with Christ and raise together with him. And what will he do? He says, I've given up my life for you. I've sacrificed for you. I've given everything for you. Never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you. Nothing can separate us from his love. And then he looks and he says, I'm pleased with you. That's the approval that we want. Not of people. We die to our own selfish ambitions. And then Jesus raises up to life and he fills us so complete, so much more. So much of life is hindered because we're looking after comfort and pleasure, and we do things for our own selfish desires of how am I going to make life work well for me so that I'm comfortable and I'm getting the most pleasure out of life. And we'll turn our backs on God to say, I want to live for my own pleasure. Jesus says, come and die with me. Set aside your own pleasure and your own comfort. Die to that. And what will he do? He says, I'll fill you with a true and abundant life. I'll satisfy you. He's the bread of life, and we eat of him, and we never hunger again. He's the water of life. We drink from him. We never thirst again. That's the true life. Jesus is offering true life. And as we celebrate communion, I'd like to ask those who are serving communion to come to the front now and join me. As we celebrate communion, this is our tangible expression. This is the practical outplaying of our life together with Jesus. And I'll invite you, if you desperately want life, as we pass the bread by, take the bread and say, I can't find life anywhere else. I'm going to die to all those other sources of looking for life, and I'm going to be connected with Jesus. I'm going to join in on him knowing that he rose from the dead. He has mastery over the grave. He has mastery over death, and I will join him in his life. And then as we pass the cup by, the same thing. If your heart's cry is, yes, I will die to everything else, and I want to live with Jesus and he be my source of life, then take the cup. Celebrate. Remember that Jesus has risen from the dead, and he is the giver of life. If you're still at a spot where you're like, well, I'm not too sure if I'm ready to die to all myself and to put aside all my own ways of living and trying to fill my life and trying to cope with this life that I have, make this as an opportunity to really consider, to look into your heart and to see, where are you at? Are you ready? Is it adequate? Or are you just going to live in a perpetual frustration, trying to hang on to life and trying to cope with the best that you have? I want to invite you, give that all up. Come to Jesus and turn to him. So let's pray for the bread together as we remember the broken body of Jesus. Father God, thank you for sending your son Jesus. Thank you that he willingly gave up his life, that he was broken for us so that we could be made whole. We praise you for this and we remember your death and your resurrection as we take this bread. In Jesus' name.